You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits. Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'm all in on Carlos Carrasco, 2017 AL Cy Young, book it. The last year I picked Garrett Richards, so what the fuck do I know?
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
And if you are an old fan of that show, you know one thing, that Paul and Jason are 100% correct the year after they make a prediction.
It's true.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Speaking of Rick Porcello, we have a friend of the podcast on today, and that is Paul Sporer of FanGraphs. Paul, how you doing?
Bad intro. That's not nice.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to episode 234 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Darius and Chuck. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing great, although I don't suggest doing two really large slow drafts at the same time. Other than that, I'm good.
I'm in two really large slow drafts and a slow auction, which I definitely do not recommend doing at the same time. But if you've never done a slow auction, is like my favorite online draft to do.
I have never.
It's fantastic. An auction is fun in itself, and I think the best way to draft. But imagining trying to balance auctioning, I think we're auctioning 36 players at a time.
Wow.
And you have 18 hours to make a bid. So it's pretty interesting. A lot of fun. You can find those over on Couch Managers. Darius, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm just recovering from watching perhaps the biggest baseball event of the century in the Mets-Red Sox spring training game, which was, of course, Tim Tebow actually getting some at-bats. Thrilling stuff.
Well, I'm sure ESPN is going fucking crazy right now.
Yeah, I can assure you that Rick Porcello made him look like a guy who was sort of casually picking up a baseball bat for the first time in a while, which I suppose is what he is really, but it certainly looked that way.
Well, speaking of Rick Porcello, we have a friend of the podcast on today, and that is Paul Sporer of FanGraphs. Paul, how you doing?
Bad intro. That's not nice. You did that because you stole the Cy Young Award from the greatest pitcher ever, Justin Verlander. But other than that, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing fantastically. Paul, why don't you let people know where you can be reached on social media and then give yourself some plugs of your work, because your work is fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that. I can be found on Twitter at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R, Snapchat, P-Sporer. I do Twitch live streams of mostly MLB The Show, but I recently did a mock draft. And I plan on doing some more draft stuff. That's PSPOR24. I wish they were all uniform, all the usernames, but they're not. I write at FanGraphs, the fantasy side called Rotographs, but I focus on saying FanGraphs because there is no Rotographs.com, so it's just FanGraphs.com/fantasy. Lead writer and editor over there. Do the podcast Sleeper in the Bus 3 to 4 times a week. It's going to be 4 times a week in season. And that just about covers it.
We appreciate you coming back on. It's always you're always one of my favorite people to come back on since the beginning. I think you are our second guest.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I enjoy being on, especially when I can disagree with you.
Yes. And this time I've made sure that the episode is recording properly, because the last time, unfortunately, it probably would have been our best episode had I released it, because it did not record a single thing I said, but everything everybody else said. So
I was going to say, that would have been very popular.
Yeah. I mean, I think we would have just topped the iTunes charts, you know. Fantasy Focus be damned, we're at the top. So, we are going to jump right into our starting pitching preview part two. If you haven't heard part one, go back and listen to Monday's show with Doug Thorburn, where we discussed a lot of guys. But I especially picked some guys for this list because I want to hear Paul's opinions. So let's start with kind of the top of the heap. That is Clayton Kershaw, the number one overall pitcher off the boards. And, you know, for some people, a top 3 to 5 pick. Paul, what are your thoughts on Kershaw this year? Where would you take him?
I mean, I can see taking him in that upper range of a top 5 pick. I understand the case of, you know, if you're going to take anyone number one that isn't Trout, it would be Kershaw. I do like at least Trout and Arenado better as my top two picks, and then I would start considering Kershaw right there. It kind of depends on what sort of league format I'm in. If it's just a standard league, you know, a lot of it just depends, because I think that 3 pick is wide open right now, whether you want to go Altuve, Betts, Kershaw, Goldschmidt, Bryant. I think you can kind of go any different way there, but I don't think I'm letting him get past, say, pick 5 or 6 for sure. I do think he's an upper half first rounder. I know the back is a little bit concerning, but even with the back injury and 149 in the third innings, he was still the second best pitcher last year because he's just that elite. And so I do think he's still a bona fide first rounder without a doubt.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Kershaw? Where would you take him?
Well, it really has nothing to do with Kershaw himself on why I wouldn't take him until like the start of the second round. I'm a pitcher phobe, as a lot of people know. And so you add in the hint of a back injury and the fact that he's been used heavily between the postseason and his, you know, multiple years around 230 innings. You know, but he hasn't done anything to really warrant that. I mean, this little hiccup with the back isn't something that should really ruin his draft stock. It's just my draft strategy is I don't think there's as much upside or as much crazy volatility in pitching, as much in hitting as there is in pitching, meaning that I would rather stock up on my big bats early, and then I'm going to take my chances. And I think people like Rick Porcello, et cetera, from year to year might give me that elite pitching number that I don't think I can get out of drafting bats where a guy like Porcello went last year. So it's not really his fault. I mean, you could nitpick his numbers, but it would seem like kind of an act of tomfoolery, you know, because, you know, his xFIP was 2.28. Well, you know, how can you blame a guy for that? You know, so there's really, he didn't do anything wrong. I'm the guy that wouldn't take him until the start of the second round, and that means I'm not getting him at all.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Kershaw? Would you spend a first round, and where would you spend it?
Yeah, I would. I think I'm a little bit more towards the back end than Paul is, so kind of splitting the difference between Chuck and Paul here, really. I think after you get past Trout and Betts and that third base group and Altuve, that's where I start to think about taking him. Obviously, you can't really question the skills, and it is just the back injury that gives you that slight bit of concern. But if Kershaw pitches a full season, I think he's so far ahead of everybody else that it's entirely justifiable if you want to take him in the top 3 or 4.
Yeah, for years I've been like Chuck, and I've been an anti-starting pitching early. I've always waited on starting pitching, but this year I've seen the light, and I actually got my first ever share of Clayton Kershaw in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Staff League. It's a 16-man league, picked him up with the 8th overall pick, and I was ecstatic because I am all about taking Clayton Kershaw in the top 3 or 4 picks. He's, like Paul mentioned, he is just so much better than the field. And even if he isn't getting 200 innings this year, he still will be better than the majority of the field, and you really can't ask for much more than that. It just gives you such a huge advantage taking him. And you can just wait. I was able to just wait on starting pitching and only grab guys as, you know, huge deals popped up for me. I as a Giants fan, it's really hard for me because I don't want to start him against my Giants. But as a fantasy baseball player and analyst, I can't imagine not taking Kershaw in my top 5 picks. You know, Anywhere outside of that, I feel is a deal. Let's talk about Chris Sale. He is moving to Boston this year, and there are some people who are very afraid of that, and there are some people who just believe it's the same old Chris Sale. Chuck, I know you've been kind of critical of Boston pitchers. What say you? Are you on mute, Chuck?
He's just not in on Chris Sale.
I'm really out. No, he's been a warrior when he was a complete warrior in Chicago, and there's a lot to be said about that. You know, and that was a really tough place to pitch as well. So, you know, some of my skepticism goes a little bit unwarranted. But again, there's always been some concern about his mechanics. He's had a lot of innings over time. You know, there's no such thing as a worry-free pitcher. I mean, everybody, you know, Mad Bum's had the same kind of issues as far as workload. But at the same time, you know, when you really dip into the numbers, you see little kinks in the armor last year, you know, and he's decided that he doesn't need to strike out as many people. And the move to the AL East, it's not that I don't like him. It's that I don't like him where he's going. I like him towards the bottom of the top five pitchers. And most of the time I see him going in the 2-3 range for pitching.
Wait, we have some breaking news coming into the studio right now. I was just kind of cruising around the interwebs and saw that Paul Spohr wrote a piece on the Hardball Times about fading aces. Paul, defend your piece and then talk about Chris Sale.
Well, it's really just a piece about finding kind of comparable guys to these aces and not paying that top dollar price. I already mentioned that I'm in on Kershaw, and in fact, the piece I don't go against Kershaw. This is the non-Kershaw assets: Scherzer, Bumgarner, and I give comparables to those two, and then Syndergaard, Sale, Kluber, Arrieta, and Darvish. And my point is that I think with the home run spike that we saw in particular, there's a measure of volatility that's added to pitchers because ERA home runs are the quickest way to ruin an ERA. And so instead of spending those early picks, I'm waiting again. I'm not really buying in. Even if it's with Scherzer and Bumgarner, I don't want to pay that first, second round. You know, Scherzer's a first rounder now in the NFBC, and Bumgarner's an early second rounder, and I just don't want to pay that. So their comps are a little bit higher level guys like Kluber and Archer. Even Kluber is only like 10, 15 picks later than Scherzer, but up at that level, every pick is incrementally worth more than it is once you start getting in the seventh round and beyond, and then of course you dip into the double digit rounds and there's just not too much difference. And then with Bumgarner, it's really nothing against Bumgarner. He's really good. He doesn't even have many risk factors. It's just, what is the real difference between Bumgarner and DeGrom right now from a skills standpoint? And I don't really see it. DeGrom does have a health concern. I freely admit that. You know, he had the ulnar nerve cleanup. But, you know, the injury guys out there, BJ Mack, I cited in the article, who did some work for Rotographs, suggested that it would be a normal offseason for him and that this isn't something that would carry on. And he's pick 71 against Bumgarner at pick 15. So I just don't see it. As for Sale specifically, I'm not particularly worried about him going over to Boston. I actually think Boston's a better park for him than Chicago in terms of numbers. That said, we did see, you know, Price struggled a bit moving over there, although he did have mechanical issues too. So I don't think we just use ace left-hander goes to Fenway, messes up, and we have to apply that to Chris Sale. I don't think it necessarily works that way, but he did drop 2.5 strikeouts off of his rate. I don't really worry about the breakdown at this point. If Chris Sale breaks, or not any more than any other pitcher, if Chris Sale breaks down at this point and the people who have been harping on him as an injury concern start pounding their chests, I'm going to pound them in the chest with a 2x4 because they're wrong. It's over. You're no longer going to be right on that because he has, what, 5 straight seasons of 200-plus innings or very close to it? Like, or no, so 192, 214, 174, 209, and 227. You didn't get that right. Now at age 28, if he starts to show some wear and tear and maybe has some DL stints, fine, but the concern when he was in his mid-20s, mid to early 20s, was this guy won't hold up. he's held up. He's been amazing. So it's really more of, I just don't want to pay the top dollar. He's picked 21. I'd rather invest and try to find maybe the next Chris Sale, like some of the hot guys that are being talked about out there, Danny Duffy, Steven Matz, James Paxton. They've got skills that are comparable to Sale. They have the ability to kind of take that level up. I just don't think that the aces outside of Kershaw are so far above their peers that they're worth taking with these early picks. I'd rather continue to stock up my hitters and then start looking at pitchers as early, you know, earliest I probably want to do is like the fourth round area.
Darius, where are you at on Chris Sale for this year?
Yeah, I don't really have any concerns with the move to Boston. I'm pretty in agreement with Paul on that. I think he's getting a big boost in terms of his catcher. I mentioned this when we did the Red Sox preview, but Deonna Navarro was 104th out of 104 catchers in framing last year, which is not good. And so regardless of who's catching him the most, I think he's going to get an improvement in that. And I don't think that Fenway is actually much different in terms of the park factor for him. So I'm certainly fine with taking Sale. I might agree with the strategy element of what Paul's saying. I think there are some better values later that I might be looking to pick up. So it's just a case of value for me if he is kind of going in the second round, and maybe I'll stay away and look to pick up a bargain later. But in terms of Sale himself, I don't really have any big concerns.
Yeah, I think that's the main point for me is I'm probably taking a hitter at this spot in the draft. But if I feel like I'm getting a really good deal on Chris Sale, I'm going to pull the trigger. I'm not afraid. I love what you said there, Darius, about the catching situation. You can't really get much worse than what he saw in Chicago. The park, he'll be fine in the park. He's going to have a better offense behind him, so you know you won't see him miss out on wins like you would have if he'd stayed in Chicago. So for me, I'm all aboard the Chris Sale bandwagon as long as I'm getting somewhat of a discount or he's falling to me in a spot that I enjoy. Let's move on and talk about the true winner, or who should have been the true winner of the AL Cy Young last year, Justin Verlander, who was robbed. He was absolutely robbed of his Cy Young. I agree with Paul. As much shit as I like to give some of my friends who are Tigers fans, Paul, what are your thoughts on Verlander for this year? Is he an ace?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is. pardon me, I was taking a drink there. I absolutely. Do this was a guy, you know, I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit. Last year I was certainly pumping Justin Verlander up, and it wasn't just because I'm a Tigers fan who really likes Justin Verlander. I wouldn't just blindly recommend someone, attach my name to it, if I didn't think that there was going to be success. But I think what is lost from too many in the 2014-15 area is that he was hurt. And yes, he did throw 206 innings in 2014, but he had core surgery in that spring training. So just because he was on the field doesn't mean he was 100%. You know, we throw things around like this guy at 80% is better than most other guys. Well, when you really do like 80% of their value, they really aren't. Like, they can be capable major leaguers. And that's kind of what Justin Verlander showed in 2014. He was better than the worst major leaguers at 80%. He managed to go out there and throw 206 innings and not completely embarrass himself, 4.54 ERA, 1.40 whip. But obviously it was bad for fantasy. He pitched through the core surgery and tweaked his mechanics, and it wasn't working. Then he had a tricep injury at the beginning of 15, played through, you know, figured his way back from that. There was issues early on, but then he took off in the second half, and it was really the return of the high fastball mixed with his secondary stuff that really set Verlander sky high. And he carried that over to 2016. His high fastball was the key again. He threw some of the highest totals of high fastballs. I forget the exact number. I was actually just writing it up the other day, and I can't remember the exact percentage of where he was, but his high fastball in terms of usage and results was just massive, and he got some of his velocity back. He's back up at 93.5, which was a four-year high for Verlander, and then his slider took a real big step forward. Some wanted to call it a cutter. He was calling it a slider. Slutter, cutter, call it whatever you want. Doesn't really matter. It was at 88 miles per hour, and it kind of had that Noah Syndergaard, what the Mets are doing, what they call a Worthen slider, which is a high velocity but still heavy break. And so he had actually a career high strikeout rate, which might surprise some given the heights that Verlander has reached before. At age 34, there is some concern just because he's a little bit older, but there's really nothing in the skills that suggests you should be completely worried about him. The 1.2 homers is a little bit high, but part of that is that he's not afraid to challenge guys instead of walking them when they have like a four, you know. I know it's pitched to the score and makes people want to vomit. There is some of that when you watch him. You will see Verlander in a 5-1 game in the sixth inning of an outing, nobody on base. He gets a 3-1 count on some scrub catcher, and he pipes one down the middle. Says, "Hey, scrub catcher, if you can hit it, good luck." And then DeAndre Navarro goes yard on him, and okay, hat tip. It's 5-2, no big deal. And a lot of times that doesn't burn him. So I don't even get too concerned on the home run rate. I do think Verlander should be looked at as a fantasy ace for sure. And you're getting him 11th off the board in NFBC drafts, and I'll happily take him there as opposed to paying the freight on somebody like Arrieta, Darvish, or even Lester and Cueto. I do have Cueto kind of right by him, though, so and so is his ADP, so I'm not even going to include Cueto there. But those other three, Arrieta, Darvish, and Lester, I'd rather wait and get Verlander.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Verlander for this year?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with Paul again. I think he is an ace. I kind of have him in that second group with Cueto and Darvish around there, kind of maybe behind the Bumgarner, Syndergaard, Sale kind of tier, but still as a fantasy number one. I think it was really impressive what we saw him do last year. The injuries really did play a big part, I think, and that slider that Paul mentioned was a huge addition, I think, that's going to help him sustain his success for another few years to come. Yeah, the other thing you've got to love about Verlander is we know he's incredibly durable. He can go out there and throw you 220, 230 innings, and as long as he does maintain that health, then I think he's a good bet to provide a bit of value this year, because you're not really having to pay for him like Justin Verlander of old. But he was actually, I think his strikeout rate was the best of his career last year, so in terms of the results for fantasy, you can really ask for anything more.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you guys in Verlander. There's part of me that wanted to kind of downgrade him a tad bit coming into the season. I have my number 11 starting pitcher in my updated ranks, which are on Fantasy Pros and going up on Fangraphs here shortly. So I am I'm fine with him as my ace, especially if I want to wait on starting pitching a little bit. You're getting him at a pretty nice discount. I think, like Paul mentioned, you know, 42nd pick overall in NFBC right now, 11th starting pitcher off the board. I don't have any concerns with him. I like the fact that he was able to pitch through being injured with the core injury. You know, you wish you would have gotten better numbers, but it shows you how tough he is and that he's going to go out there and deliver as long as he is right. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons, especially with the David Price news, to really be comfortable with him as a starting pitcher. One, gives you some kind of safety when a guy like Price isn't offering that anymore. Let's talk about Carlos Carrasco, and Darius, I'll start with you on this. Where are you on Carrasco? Is he an elite starting pitcher to you?
I haven't quite got him in the elite, not because I don't think he has the stuff to do it, but just because there are so many concerns around his injury history and his durability. I mean, he's going to turn 30 soon. He's still only gone over 180 innings once. I know there are other things in his history as well, makeup issues and struggles he had in the minors that play into that. But I think you are taking a bit of a leap of faith with Carrasco, and I certainly wouldn't want to be going in with him as my number one unless it was a very shallow league and I was extremely confident that I could pick up guys later in the draft or stream guys and not have to worry too much about pitching. So I think the upside is definitely there for him to be elite, but there are quite a few red flags there as well. I think you've just got to assume a really wide range of outcomes for Carrasco, and if he pans out, then he may well win you your league, but you should be prepared for the possibility that he might just sink you and only pitch 80 or 90 innings, something like that.
Chuck, I know you've been negative on Carrasco previously. Are you still kind of down on him?
I'm probably as down on him as you can get, from the standpoint that not only has he only pitched over 180 innings once, but he's only pitched over 146 and a third innings once. So it's not like you're getting that 160 to 180 innings on a regular basis from him. You know, he's a sporadic pitcher in so much as, you know, he can go out any given day and strike out 15, 16 guys and, you know, carry you, especially in head-to-head leagues, etc., for a full week. But at the same time, you kind of never know when he's going to throw a couple of bad starts and then he's going to land on the DL for a month or a month and a half. His stuff is so nasty and people are so high on the Indians that I think his market value has just been pushed up on an obnoxious amount. You know, and he was basically almost a throw-in in a trade back in the day. So, I mean, the Indians have gotten a lot of return on investment from him. But I think where people are drafting Carlos Carrasco, you know, as that sort of second-tier ace, I think that's too much of a gamble for me.
And for the rebuttal, I'll throw it to Paul.
No, I mean, I like Carrasco a bit more there. I think one of the things with regards to his injury, I certainly understand the durability piece in terms of logging that 200-inning season, which we certainly haven't seen yet. They've been freak injuries, though. He got the hamstring or knee, whatever it was, that first one was covering first base last year, and then he got hit in the hand by an Ian Kinsler batted ball that ended his season prematurely last year. So those are two freak injuries, neither arm-related. And so that gives me some – that heartens me a little bit in terms of looking at these workloads and saying, well, it's not something that he necessarily can't hold up. It's freak injuries. It's not a degenerative elbow or shoulder. So I'm not too worried about him there. And I think the skills are just so elite that when we do finally get that 200-inning season, it's going to be special. He does have some blow-ups at times, and it is a little bit frustrating because you see the skills and you're curious, like, you know, why does this guy ever get ripped for five, six earned runs or eight earned runs like the start he had against Minnesota last year? But I mean, that kind of happens to anybody. It's just a mitigating them. If he has one or two of those, but it's in 25 starts, it just has a bigger impact than if it comes in the 33 starts. So he does need to show that he can make that full season, that full complement of starts. But I really do like Carlos Carrasco, and I think the skills that he has merit his pick where he is, because he's right around guys like Archer and Strasburg. They go right before him. Carlos Martinez goes right after him. Those guys are in a similar kind of boat where they've got these elite skills. They've shown the top upside, but they have their own wart, whether it's you know, Archer falling back last year, Strasburg's health. Martinez has had health woes too. So I think he deserves to be in the tier that he's in, and I'm definitely still taking Carlos Carrasco.
One of my favorite fantasy baseball podcasts of all time it was Paul's old Towers of Power show. That you and Jason Collette did. And if you are an old fan of that show, you know one thing, that Paul and Jason are 100% correct the year after they make a prediction.
It's true.
And who did you pick to win the AL Cy Young last year?
Carlos Carrasco.
So I'm going to piggyback on that, and he's going to be my AL Cy Young pick this year.
You know who else I loved last year was Shelby Miller, and so
yeah.
enjoy that to a much lesser degree, but I wouldn't be surprised because I loved him when everybody hated him and he was terrible. But yeah, I'm chronically a year early. This is something that's afflicted me for I can't even tell you how long. It's even come cross sport. I was on Derrick Rose before he won his MVP, Kevin Love before he broke out over in fantasy football, or excuse me, fantasy basketball. Had some guys in fantasy football I was too early on. It's just something that I'm always a year early. It's nauseating, and hopefully that's true with Carrasco, because yeah, then this year we're going to get the AL Cy Young. But I am staying on board, so that's the thing. I've learned to not jump off the guy if I am a year early and I still reap the dividends. It's just not in that first season.
Yeah, I don't think this is the year to quit. This is the year to buy in. I love where he's going. I feel like he is coming at a pretty nice discount from where he should come from. I mean, he's going pretty much right next to Steven Strasburg. I would take Carrasco all day long considering Strasburg's injury profile. I have Carrasco as, I believe, my number 13 starting pitcher, and I would be totally fine with him as my ace. I actually got him as my second starting pitcher in the CBSA only auction, and I feel like I'm going to dominate the starting pitching categories in that league because of that. I agree with Paul that the injuries have been fluke injuries, and they shouldn't be levied against him in terms of his ability to stay on the field. And for that reason, I think this is the first year he does reach over 200 innings, and offers the nice ratios that we've seen from him in the past. So, I'm all in on Carlos Carrasco, 2017 AL Cy Young, book it. Though last year I picked Garrett Richards, so what the fuck do I know? All right, let's move on and talk about Kenta Maeda. Paul, Kenta Maeda is a guy that, you know, came to the league last year, showed some really good stuff. I'm very hesitant on him. Are you?
No, I mean, I'm not hesitant on him. I'm not diving in head first or anything, but I think I do like Kenta Maeda maybe a little bit more than others. I think he had a really solid debut with a lot of aspects that I think are going to hold over. You know, good swinging strike rate kind of backs up his strikeout rate. Maeda didn't walk a lot of guys, had a, you know, mediocre home run rate. I think the team support is going to help him continue to pile up W's. I actually liked a lot of what I saw. I'd be curious to hear where you're down on Maeda.
For me, and I liked a lot of what I saw too. For me, it's the way they structure that contract because of his the medicals when he signed.
Yeah,
just petrifies me. You know, it seems to me that the organization as a whole is not comfortable with what they saw in his medicals. And that is one reason I kind of downgrade him a tad bit. He has added some weight to his frame this offseason in order to attempt to pitch more innings. Maybe it's Giants homerism and I'm downgrading a Dodger. but to me, I just worry that he's one of those guys that I can't guarantee is going to get to 200, even though he did pitch 175 first full year in the majors. So,
in fairness, you can't really guarantee it for anybody. For sure. I mean, sure, there's some risk, but you could also kind of say they saw an opportunity to take advantage of those sketchy medicals and get a guy that they really liked on a very cheap 8-year deal at 3.1 mil per season. And so, you know, they still liked him enough to give him 8 years. And if they were terrified of what he was going to do, I don't know that you want to just piss away 3.1 mil for, you know, 4 or 5 years if they only thought he was going to last for a couple. So, you know, I understand that, and that's what had people sketchy last year. It was not a guy that I was necessarily looking at. It was a wait and see sort of thing. But from what I saw, I really liked it. And, you know, these guys, when they come over, I think a lot of them, you know, they are similar in terms of some of the things that they do with the skills that they have. They don't usually walk players. These guys that come over from the Japanese league, they have the similar kind of mechanics with the hitch in them, which seems to play well here in the majors. I just think we saw a lot to like, and you know, a repeat wouldn't be something that's out of the ordinary, particularly if he's healthy. And of course, the if he's healthy is such a big question for so many pitchers that it kind of goes without saying, even though we do say it on a lot of different guys. And I don't think he's being overpriced at right around pick 100 as the 22nd pitcher off the board. I think some leagues you'll be able to get him closer to, you know, the 30th pitcher. It kind of depends what kind of league you're in. And at that point, I'm definitely investing. He's going right ahead of Danny Duffy, who I'm big on, so I'm probably not taking Maeda as much, but it's nothing against Maeda. It's more pro Duffy.
Yeah, I mean, he's going right in the area of kind of the iffy guys, or guys, you know, guys who could be elite but have question marks. Danny Duffy, like you mentioned, Aaron Sanchez, Zach Greinke. I just think I would take all those guys and then probably a few other ones down below him, above him. But again, I am going to cop that. I think this could – my Giants homerism definitely may play a role in this. But, yeah, I just do. I worry that there is going to be a mid-season snap at some point with this guy, and you're going to lose all your investment. But like you mentioned, virtually every pitcher has that risk. So maybe I need to reevaluate before the next update on the ranks. Darius, what are your thoughts on Maeda?
Yeah, no, similarly, not as a Giants homer, I wouldn't say, but I certainly felt very much the same as you did when I saw that bizarre contract, and more details have come out since that suggest that the Dodgers looked at whatever information they had on Maeda, the scans and things, and thought, well, this guy's arm does not look good, so they set him up with this incentive-laden deal, which I think was one of the weirdest contracts we've seen in a while. And he went out and pitched more innings than anybody else in the team, including Kershaw. So I guess that shows what we know about health. I don't know what's going on now. They seem to be fairly comfortable with him, so I don't know if that just means that they saw something that they weren't familiar with, and that meant that they kind of wanted to take a step back and not offer him as much money. It's obviously very difficult to find out medical information like that. So I think as long as Maeda proves that he's healthy, and he did for a whole season last year, and we haven't seen anything this spring to suggest that he's not, then maybe we should give him a little bit more leeway. In terms of the skills, I was very impressed. I thought he commanded all his pitches well. Really impressed with the slider, good strikeout rate, and he induced a lot of soft contact as well. So I think he might be a decent value where he's going. And if he does turn out to get hurt, I don't think if he's going around that pick 100 range, that's the kind of thing that's going to kill you as much as maybe drafting a Carrasco in the fifth or sixth round could.
How dare you? Chuck, where are you at on Maeda? Are you willing to take him as a top 25 guy?
Well, I think I got him outside of the top 25 in our staff league. And I think the thing that I really like about him is that I think the first year coming over can be such a culture shock in so many different ways, including getting used to the schedule for pitching. And you see this offseason that, you know, that he's added 10 pounds of muscle on purpose to try and be able to handle the rigors of this schedule versus the extra day off that they get pitching in Asia. So I really love his value where he's going, because I think he can get easily shoved down behind those guys that you're talking about, behind the Aaron Sanchez's and behind the Danny Duffy's. And I like and own some pieces of those guys too, because this is an area that I draft a lot of my starting pitchers from. But at the same time, you look at a lot of his numbers last year, and it's just, you know, well over 40% for his ground ball rate is certainly good. You know, he's striking out over three times as many people as he's walking, you know, striking out more than a guy per inning. So if you're going to take a chance on a guy, I like a guy who's in the NL West, because those ballparks, when you don't have to play in Colorado, you know, or in Arizona, those other three ballparks are really good to pitch in, including his home park. And so I'm higher on Maeda than you guys are. And I just want to mention that the Dodgers as a whole, since Andrew Friedman came aboard, everyone said, oh, he's got his roots in Tampa, and now he's going to have money, and this is going to be this crazy circus, and, you know, Lord only knows what's going to happen. Well, then they've got three outfielders. Their best one can't even run the bases, and they don't even go and get another one. So they're not spending money or acting like the old Dodgers, and I think they're excessively cautious, like the Rays always were. And so I'm a little less concerned about this weird contract. And a little more happy about him having 1 year in the bigs that was already good, that I think he can build upon to a certain extent. I don't think he can be a top five pitcher, but it wouldn't stun me at all if he managed to weasel his way into around the top 15.
All right, let's talk about Paul's arch nemesis. He used to be his friend when he was on the Tigers. Now he is a dead set against this guy. What are your thoughts this year on Rick Porcello?
You know, he's going to be overdrafted because of the Cy Young Award that he ripped away from Justin Verlander. You know, he's at pick 110 right now in NFBC leagues, pitcher 26, and I don't see how you can take him over guys like Garrett Cole, even Julio Teheran. I think I like better Danny Salazar. I'm not done with Felix Hernandez. I know some folks are, but I'm not one of those folks. And it's not that I would necessarily take Kevin Gausman, Jameson Taillon, Marcus Stroman, and a few other, I'm not going to name everybody, ahead of Porcello, but I would wait to take them at their cost as opposed to paying the freight on Porcello. It's not that he's a bad pitcher. It's not that he didn't have a fantastic season last year. Nobody's saying that, but it's just hard to look at what he did and say that that was the best season in the American League last year, unless you just get hung up on a 22-4 record, and you'd have to be so fucking stupid to do that. And so obviously that does not apply to any of us here, but some of the voters for the AL Cy Young obviously got enamored of that. 3.15 ERA, 1.01 WHIP. Like the WHIP, I think the WHIP is something that he's going to continue to be an asset in, and he is a workhorse. Even in his early 20s when he was building up, he was guaranteed for like 175 or so innings, which was perfectly fine for somebody of his age kind of working up. And now I think we're going to see a series of 200-inning seasons. He did get nicked up in 2015, so he's not on a streak of 200, but it's been 205, 172, 223, and I think he'll be up over 200 this year. And Porcello will contribute to your WHIP, but I think the ERA is going to be closer to the mid-threes, maybe bumping the upper threes even, because I just don't think that the batting average on balls in play is necessarily going to repeat. It's a solid defense behind him, but he's not a heavy ground ball guy anymore anyway, and that was his big thing in Detroit, was he had an amazing ground ball rate, but the defense didn't have the defense to necessarily turn that into outs. So I just think there's going to be some regression. It's going to be a solid but unspectacular kind of season. The volume's going to be nice, but I'm not picking him at that slot. There's no real upside to it, and it's just not a sexy pick at pitcher 26.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Porcello for this year?
Yeah, I think I was kind of expecting him to be a bit more of a value. I think largely influenced by the mock that we did very early in the off season, where I think I picked him up as my fourth starter, kind of around the 140, 150 range. And I thought, oh, if I can get Porcello there, it'd be great. That is not happening. He seems to be going inside the top 100 on both Yahoo and CBS now as well. I think he's going crazy high on CBS. Yeah, it looks like he's 78th off the board at the moment.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So while I think you know, he made some nice steps forward last year, and I do think Paul's right about him being, you know, fairly reliable. He's been durable over the course of his career, and I think the WHIP is relatively sustainable. There is obviously regression coming, and I don't think he has the kind of upside to be drafted in that spot. So as long as he continues to go there, I am definitely out.
And here's the one thing I will say before I throw it to Chuck on ADPs. Make sure you realize what site ADPs you're using, because one, it'll affect where they go in drafts on those sites, but yes. Also, like for instance, CBS caters a lot to head-to-head points formats. Mm-hmm. So starting pitching, you're going to get drummed up. You know, NFBC caters to 15-team formats. So ESPN caters to 10-team formats. So I mean, just make sure you know when you see those numbers that you kind of realize that, because that's it's the reason he's so high on CBS. I would assume, and I'm just guessing. But I know that they cater to a lot of head-to-head points formats, which would bump up starting pitching as a whole. But yes,
go ahead, Paul. And in NFBC, there's no trading, so his mm-hmm. stability, his volume is going to be an asset there as well. So yeah, I think that's a great point in general about knowing your leagues, especially if you do the draft online. You need to know where guys are going to be going, and it's going to influence some of your opponents. They're going to say, "Oh, that guy's still there, and there he is," or other guys are going to be hidden. So I think that's a tremendous point. It's looking like most of the leagues are having Porcello pretty high, and so I think that's going to keep his price inflated.
And that's one of the reasons why a lot of podcasts, including our own site, NFBC numbers too, is because, one, it's the more standard game, I think, that people who listen to fantasy podcasts probably go with in terms of a 15-team league. But also, it's money players. So you're not getting a ton of free kind of players that mess around with the ADPs. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Porcello for this year?
Well, there's a factor at play here that I like to call regression security. I mean, not only does he have a huge volume of work before he spiked last year, but on top of it, he's in a really rough division where I think falling back to career norms gets his, his former shortcomings could really get multiplied by the a combination of the ballparks and the lineups within his own division. So it's hard for me to get overly excited about drafting somebody, anyone coming off of what looks to be a career season, like most people feel Porcello just had. But in this situation, I just think that makes it so much harder to do, because he's going to get no wiggle room for forgiveness within that division, and even within the own park, his own park. So it's hard for me to get on board. I doubt I will own a share of Rick Porcello unless I get him at a very good price in an auction.
Yeah, I will not own Rick Porcello this year. I am low man on him on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits ranks, on the Fangraphs ranks. I just don't see how he can repeat last year, and he's going just way too high for me. Paul mentioned a list of guys going after him that I won't necessarily repeat, but I pretty much look at his eight. I pretty much look where he's going on NFBC, and I think I would take probably seven or eight or of the 10 guys following him above him. So I think I'm priced out. I think he should deliver a decent baseline, and so I think he has some safety. I don't think he's going to revert all the way back to his 2015 numbers. But if I look at like the depth chart projections on FanGraphs, I see like a 3.77 ERA, and I think that is pretty reasonable. You know, I think he'll probably maintain the strikeout rate. I think the walks may come up a tad bit, but I don't believe that what we saw last year is a new baseline for Porcello, and that's the way he's being drafted. So I can't advocate taking him. Another guy I can't advocate taking is Rich Hill, and I've made my thoughts pretty clear on this podcast why I will be staying far, far away from Rich Hill. Paul, will you be?
No, probably not. Now, it depends on the league type for sure. In 10 and 12 team leagues, absolutely not, because the replacement value is going to be higher, and I'm willing to take his 100 elite innings. I mean, I don't even think that you can necessarily project him for 120 at this point. You probably have to be thinking about 100, 110. And, you know, he threw, what, 110 in the third last year, and he was the 22nd best pitcher according to ESPN's player rater. That's pretty impressive. That speaks to the quality of those innings. And I don't see anything in the skills that suggests he won't continue to be very good, even at age 37. You can regress a little bit, and even if he's, say, you know, top 35 for his 110 innings, you also have to factor in what you're going to get out of the replacement player that you're going to fill into that slot. And if you do well there, then again, you are still getting a top 30, top 25 sort of pitcher in that slot. So 10 and 12 leagues for sure. 15 team, you know, it starts to kind of depend on the pitchers I have ahead of him. If I am more in the Carrasco range where I've got a little bit of risk in my ace there as opposed to, say, Verlander, then no, I'm not going to take Rich Hill. I might actually lean closer to like a Felix Hernandez, who I feel very comfortable will get me 200 plus innings. I know he had an injury last year, but I generally trust him. It's going to depend on the makeup of my rotation, but if I'm like Verlander and Cole Hamels and then Rich Hill's my number three, I feel very, very comfortable taking him. I still think, again, elite skills, even in the lower amount of innings. And then there's still the off chance that I can get 140, 150 innings, and then that would be huge. So, no, I'm not completely running away from Rich Hill.
Darius, are you running away from Rich Hill?
No, not at all. I feel very similarly to Paul. I think if it's a shallower league, then I'm perfectly happy to take him and take the 100 or 120 innings of what is pretty elite production. I mean, he was essentially at least a top 10 pitcher last year when he pitched, and maybe a top 5, depending on what metrics you look at. So I think if you can take that kind of production, even if you think you might only get 15 to 20 starts out of him, and then replace that with guys you can stream, then I'm pretty on board with that. But the harder it gets to fill those other innings, the less likely I am to take him. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about Rich Hill. I love the skills. That curveball is incredible. And yeah, I don't think I'll be anywhere near as shying away from him as you are.
Chuck, you've been a person who's always kind of stayed away from injury risk pitchers. Are you staying away from Rich Hill?
Well, it depends. I'm going to have to use a barometer to see how high everyone else in my league is on him. You know, he's one of those guys that I'm tracking because, like Paul said, I love what Paul said, because he said you have to look at how you're building your staff when you get to the point that you would have him. If you have risky pitchers in front of him, boy, you're adding a lot of extra risk to it. And then both what Darius and Paul said is you have to look at exactly how hard it's going to be to have quality replacement value out on the waiver wire that you can pick up and insert when he's going to miss some time. You know, in a way, it can't be held against him that the blister problem held him out for so long last year. But at another level, it's like it feels like one of those things that could recur at almost any time, especially a guy with such a unique repertoire that he uses to keep hitters off balance. He's really a neat guy to watch pitch. It's a great story because he toiled for so long. You know, this is looking at his 12th year in the bigs. He toiled for so long in obscurity, and now, you know, he's getting paid at the end of his career and just really using his arsenal to its fullest when everything else wasn't working is sort of the story behind what's happened with him. At the same time, you have to gauge how much of this feel-good story can move forward with all his years in the bullpen, and you have to gauge the fact that if you're really in dire need of somebody who's likely to give you at least 160 innings, you really have to try and look the other way.
Yeah, for me, I just can't get past the lack of innings that you're going to see from him. Maybe this is the year he puts together 150, but I just can't buy into it. I think what Paul and Darius mentioned is a really, really good thing to think about. If you're in a shallower format, a 10, a 12-team league, you definitely want to bump him up your rankings, because whatever he does give you is going to be elite. It's just a matter of, for a person who wants to project how many innings their staff is going to get and feel somewhat comfortable about it, I just don't know what to project him for. I mean, would I be surprised if he threw 45 innings this year? No. Would I be surprised if he threw 100? No. But I would be surprised if he threw over like 130. So for that reason alone, I'm probably out on – or I'm definitely out on Rich Hill, especially because I tend to play in deeper format leagues. Let's move on and talk about Michael Fulmer, AL Rookie of the Year. And since he's a Tiger, let's just throw it to Paul. Paul, what are your thoughts on Michael Fulmer?
I really like Michael Fulmer. I think there is going to be some regression in the ERA probably, because he was trending pretty high last year, and there was a little bit of favorability when you kind of compared it to his FIP and even the skills obviously that make up the FIP. You got to be careful just looking at FIP saying, oh, that's his true talent. That's where he's going to regress to. It doesn't really work that way. But when you dig in further, you understand, okay, he wasn't necessarily striking out a ton of guys. Walk rate was solid. BABIP was very low, though. And left on base rate was very high. And if those two factors alone normalize, even if the strikeouts go up and the walks stay the same, he could still raise his ERA. So I do think Fulmer's ERA will probably be up closer to like a 340 or something. But I think there's actually a ton of strikeout potential here, and I think we could see him really spike to maybe a strikeout per inning or higher. He had 10% swinging strike rate last year, which is just a little bit above average, right around average, but 95 mile per hour fastball, great swing and miss slider that sits about 88 miles per hour on average, and the changeup took a massive jump forward last year. In fact, that's what really spurred his breakout, was in the fifth start. He started trusting it more at the advice of James McCann, had a huge start against Tampa Bay, and then just took off. He was actually pitching pretty poorly through his first four starts, and that was the key change there, was that changeup. And so you have three pitches now that can get swings and misses. We already knew about the first two, and you add that third. I think the strikeout potential, now that he has a year under his belt, is what we're really going to see a big difference in Fulmer with. So even if the ERA and WHIP inch up 340, 116 sort of deal, then I think we're going to see about a 25% strikeout rate, which should be about a strikeout per inning. And that will make up the difference, I think, in terms of overall value. So I'm still taking him where he's being drafted in leagues right now, which is in the 30s among starting pitchers.
I think you just nailed it, because I look at the projections on Fangraphs, Depth Charge, Steamer, and even the fans, and I feel like they're not giving him enough credit in the ERA and WHIP ratios. And then I look over at the K9, and I agree with you. I think there is reason to believe that he's going to be getting closer to 9 strikeouts per 9. And to me, I think he is. I think people are projecting so much regression. I think to quote Nate Ravitz and Matthew Berry, I think
Nate's gone too far.
Nate has gone too far.
That's right.
There's no reason to think he's not going to throw 180 innings this year, that the strikeout rate won't go up. Sure, the ERA and the WHIP will probably regress a little bit. I don't think it's going to regress up towards a 4 ERA. I think a 3.5 is reasonable, and that price is baked in to where he's going currently in drafts. Mm-hmm. So I think he is a little bit of a steal right now. And if you can get him at his current price, I think you're doing pretty well for yourself. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Michael Fulmer for this year?
Well, I'm going to go back to a statement I used before, and I'm going to say I think there's a lot better regression insurance involved here, because he plays in a reasonable park. He plays on a team that has one of the best offenses in his division. I think, as has been noted before, there's three teams basically in this division who could be either in such an early rebuild mode like the Twins, or you have the White Sox and the Royals, who all could be selling out by the end of the season with as many free agents as the Royals have coming up. And I 100% think that I group Aaron Sanchez with it, who I know is a different story because he's got a lot different arsenal. But I group Aaron Sanchez and Fulmer together as the two sort of breakouts last year that are young. And everyone's assuming that since they didn't have they didn't have the hype going into last year, everyone's sort of assuming that that means that they have to take a huge step back. And I just don't see the step back in Fulmer that everyone else does. So I will own multiple pieces of Fulmer. And if I needed any bigger assurance of it, nobody works harder at studying pitching than Paul Sporer. And if he's he's a Tiger fan and he likes Fulmer and the way he studies pitching, I mean, our listeners out there, get a share of Michael Fulmer and get it now.
I appreciate the compliment there. And I do love the Tigers. I watch a ton of them. Some might say there's bias there, but watching all of their games, I feel like I can separate my fandom from the analysis, and I just saw a lot to like with him. I think a factor that you guys mentioned too is that his innings are going to go up too. So even if the ERA regresses, like we're saying, the strikeout volume and the impact of a 3.40 ERA in 190 innings could be almost as good as a 3.06 ERA that he had last year in 159 innings, let alone the fact if he goes over 200, which I don't think is completely out of the realm. This dude is a horse, 6'3", 210, probably closer to 230 too, as well. I think 210 is listed. He's a big dude too. So I think there's workhorse potential here with Fulmer, and I really like him.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Fulmer?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to be the odd man out here. I don't actually see that much discount here. I know people were saying that people are down on him and projecting regression, but where he's going kind of seems more or less to be drafting him based on what he did last season. So I don't think there are a lot of people saying, oh, well, Michael Fulmer's taking a step back and ranking him that way, because he's kind of going just outside the top 100 from what I can see. I just think there definitely are components there, but this list is certainly littered with players like someone we'll talk about in a second, Kevin Gausman, who's got the components to be a great starter, but hasn't actually put that together to the point where he's worth this kind of draft pick yet. So I just think for somebody who had such a low BABIP, the strand rate that Paul mentioned as well, and the chance that he doesn't take that strikeout step forward this year, if he does end up with a mid-3s ERA and maybe a similar kind of strikeout rate, then he's actually not going to be worth anywhere near this pick. So I'm just kind of I don't think that the price at the moment is baking in the chance that he takes a little step back, and so I'm probably going to miss out if he keeps going where he is at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, but in terms of like his NFBC draft position, look at the three guys going behind him. It's Tanner Roark, Matt Harvey, and Dallas Keuchel. And while a couple of them probably have a higher ceiling, all of them have a much lower floor. And so considering where he's going, I just like the price. But that is a fair point, Darius. Let's move on to a favorite of mine and Paul's. But I'll start with Chuck to see what his thoughts on Kevin Gausman are.
Well, I bought into Kevin Gausman at the right times last year, so he did me a lot of favors last year. But his outlook is a little bit shinier than it is to me. I still saw him struggle to pitch deep in games at times last year. I really don't like the ballpark or the division. I'm so guarded with how I do my starters. You know, like I'm into guys like Matt Moore and people like that people are gambling on because of their divisions and because of being in the NL. And I usually stay away from guys that I think have a significant jump to make yet, and they have to make it within the AL East. So, you know, he's got a great bullpen behind him, and I think that's an important factor to think about too. And I won't be surprised. I'm going to own some pieces of him because I got him so cheap in some keeper leagues last year. But I'm pretty guarded in my optimism for him this year.
Paul, are you guarded in your optimism for him?
I'm still in. This is a guy I've been a big fan of in recent years, and I'm not really running away from that. I do understand that there is risk. I mean, we can't ignore the fact that he hasn't really done it yet. He still has to show that he can actually take that step forward. I think one thing I am a little bit concerned about is Baltimore's history in developing pitchers. They don't have a great track record. We know that Arrieta obviously left there and became a star, but it's really not just that. It's that, you know, they've had a lot of these guys that were supposed to be a lot more than they were. Brian Mattis ended up having to be a reliever. Chris Tillman never really jumped up to that frontier guy that he was supposed to be. Instead, he's kind of been a mid to back rotation sort of guy. Gausman's a guy right now that has shown flashes of greatness, but hasn't really taken that step forward. He needs to keep the ball in the park. That is the biggest issue for him right now. And if we don't see that sort of change this year, then we got to bring down his potential a level or two. But for right now, I still think he has it. If he keeps the ball in the park, we're looking at a guy with a low 3 ZRA who could push sub 3 with great strikeouts. And after pitching 180 innings last year, I think it's time to jump forward and get that 200 innings. So I'm still in on Gausman. I don't think the price is too high either. I think it's completely fair. It's at a level where he needs to do something for you to be worth it, but not so overrated where, you know, if he flops, you're dead. If you know, taking him at like pitcher 24 or something, he's basically back into the 30s, early 40s. And I'll take Gausman there for sure.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Gausman for this year?
Yeah, it sort of felt like last year was a little bit closer to what we were expecting without actually getting there. I think he does have the components. Fastball's maybe a little bit on the straight side. I think he could do with commanding that better. And he certainly doesn't play in the best division for avoiding the home run. So that is a concern for me. But I think he started to use the splitter a bit more as the season went on last year, and that seemed to produce some better results. So I think there is a version of Gausman in here where if he gets these components right, like Paul said, he could even get pushed to a low or even sub 3 ZRA. And that's kind of quite an exciting proposition to me where he's being drafted at the moment. So I'm quite tempted by Gausman this year, although I'm aware that could Jewel just get burned again?
Yeah, I think this is the year that Gausman finally does it, and I think I've been saying that for like 3 or 4 years. So it's really hard for me, but I look at like his August and September splits, gave up less home runs than he did prior to that. His ERA was under 3.20 in both months. He actually, you know, to kind of counteract Chuck's point a little bit, he was actually better third time through the lineup last year than he was the second time through the lineup. I think I see these as encouraging signs. Paul's right. He does have to keep the ball in the park, and that is a hard park and a hard division to do so. But I think the 1.4 home runs per nine last year is a little bit too high for my taste in terms of what I would see for this year. I think this is the year he takes a step forward, and I'm betting on it. I have him ranked as my number 26 starting pitcher, and that may just be a little bit too high for most people. But I believe, and this is the year it's going to finally happen. All right, let's we're going to go a little bit quicker on these last three guys because we're running up against the clock. Paul, what are your thoughts on Lance McCullers for this year?
I absolutely love Lance McCullers. Right now, he needs to show that he can stay healthy. And that's a big concern right now. And he does walk too many guys, but the raw skills are there. The arsenal is disgusting. The swing and miss capability is there. Even with that awful, awful walk rate last year, he still had impressive results. This is a guy I'm betting on just because the talent is there and the cost isn't too high. I know there's plenty of risk, but you see a profile like this, you got to get a share or two.
Darius, what are your thoughts on McCullers?
Yeah, I'm very excited. The strikeout stuff is obviously incredible. We might be looking at sort of Rich Hill Jr. here, somebody who's got a killer curveball, serious health concerns, but if it all pans out, then he could really be a huge upside pick. So I'm definitely going to be picking up quite a few shares from McCullers this year and hoping that he can stay on the field.
Chuck, are you staying away from him because you're afraid of injury guys?
If I can, when I do draft injury guys, like I do own some Syndergaard this year, I want extreme upside, and there's certainly extreme upside here. So this is one of those guys I'm going to wait and see what the temperature is like in the room on him. Most of the leagues I've been in, there's somebody who's like crazy who takes him, you know, 10 pitchers higher than he's rated for whatever reason. That's my personal experience with him, because they want to be the first person in on this train if it really starts to take off. So I don't know. It'll be here or there for me.
Yeah, I'm in on the colors, and it feels a tad bit hypocritical for me to bag on a guy like Rich Hill and not bag on a guy like McCullers, but I just love the draft cost this year. I mean, last year we saw him going just extremely high in certain drafts. I mean, it cooled off at one point, but I mean, he's the 45th starting pitcher off the board, 175th overall. I just love the upside if he does stay healthy. It is a gamble, and you need to make sure you have some stability within your rotation before you get to that point, especially in deeper formats. But like everybody else has mentioned on this episode, he is one of those guys with extreme ceiling. He does have a low floor, so just kind of bake that into your team roster construction. All right, Carlos Rodon, another guy that I've been getting a lot in drafts, and that I am seemingly very high on, though I didn't think I would be coming into the year. Paul, what are your thoughts on Carlos Rodon?
This is another guy I really like. I wrote a column at Fangraphs called The Leap Year Candidates for the American League and the National League, guys that I really think could take a big step up. And, you know, there's a giant hurdle for Carlos Rodon. He really needs to get his fastball in order. His fastball is actually kind of dog shit right now, and that's a big issue. But it's a big problem for a lot of young guys kind of figuring out how to harness it. He does have quality velocity from the left side, 93.4 miles per hour on average, can run it up into the mid-90s. But the command and control of it are lacking. The control took a step forward last year, and he did cut his walk rate, which was really nice. But he sacrificed some of that command, and the home runs went way up. And so I think the fastball command is normally the issue for a lot of young guys. You can hear that. You can just repeat that. And it sounds like you're not trying, but just continue to repeat that. It's just the truth, though. It's the biggest issue for a lot of guys, and I think Rodon is definitely one of them. That slider is plus-plus. It is absolutely an elite pitch, and that certainly carries him. The changeup is emerging as well, and so you're going to have the three-pitch arsenal. Shouldn't have trouble with righties. I think for what he's done in these first 2 years, despite having such a shitty fastball, really speaks to his talent. And it might not happen until 18, but this is the kind of guy that can kind of skip that step and take the two jumps forward in 1 year. And that's why you bet on a Carlos Rodon.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Rodon?
My thoughts are that in keeper leagues and in leagues that are use quality starts, I like him a lot more. Because I think, you know, we could see some growth this year and really see him take off the following year. He's showing signs of it. And then just the quality start thing is I'm a little concerned about where that organization is right now and what they're going to do to surround him with some talent that can help some of his counting numbers. But I share your guys' excitement. I remember people hailing him out of NC State with that slider as like the best college pitcher that we had seen in a long time, and I'm not ready to give up on him yet just because he's had some struggles early on.
You know who his teammate was at NC State, right? On the offensive side? No, Trey Turner. They were both on the same team, and I remember they were both, you know, really competing to be high-end picks. Trey Turner had a wonky, I believe, second half to that final college season, so he ended up going 13th overall, but I remember him being talked up as a potential top five pick, and I think that's forgotten a little bit with his emergence last year. Like, oh, you know, how good is this guy? I mean, he was heralded as this super elite talent. So both these guys, I think, are really going to start to show why they were so hyped at NC State.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons why Turner got lost in the shuffle is because of that weird trade that made him as the pick to be named later, even though we all knew who it was.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of depressed a little bit of his prospect stock. Darius, did you already talk on Rodon?
No, I don't have a huge amount to add. I think there's huge potential there. The slider is just ridiculously filthy, and I think if he can get over those fastball issues and just maybe bring along the changeup a little bit, then there's a really, really good starting pitcher in here. I think Chuck's point about the quality starts is a valid one. The White Sox could be a disaster this year, so if you are looking for wins, this probably isn't the place. But I think there's massive upside here, and if this is the year he breaks out, then he's going to be a huge bargain.
I think he's one of those guys that is, and I mentioned or alluded to this on Monday's show with Doug, because I took Carlos Rodon and kind of sniped Doug in the Barf League draft. Knowing that him and Sammy were both pretty high on them, having listened to their podcast. But I think he's one of those guys that in draft rooms is really going to vary from room to room where he's going to end up. And if you look on his NFBC ADP, he's got a high pick of 155 and a low of 283. So, I mean, you're from room to room, you're going to get better discounts. But I love the upside. There's very few guys going as late as him that have his kind of upside. I think, you know, the step forward he took last year, and especially towards the end of last year, really tells me that he might be ready for another big step forward. Paul may be right in terms of it may come in 2018, but I'm willing to bet that, especially at the draft price, that it's going to come in 2017. Though what Chuck mentioned is true as well. Definitely, for me, more of a target in quality start leagues than in wins leagues. All right, let's finish up with Jarrell Cotton, which is like a sleeper in the bust, like a fantasy-approved guy. I mean, absolutely. I don't think anybody in the industry has hyped him more. And is, you know, I think you guys are kind of responsible for his draft stock going through the roof.
I'm okay with that. I mean, I fell in love with this guy, you know, watching what he did. It was a small sample, but the stuff is there, particularly that curve, or excuse me, that changeup is probably plus, plus, plus. And I don't think they really necessarily say that about pitches. It's more plus and plus, plus. But I think you go three pluses on just how elite this changeup is. And that's a huge factor. A lot of young pitchers, you know, we talk about fastball command being an issue. And usually the development of a changeup is another common issue that you hear with young players. So he has that in place. And he has the kind of the fastball command going too. Now, it is more control than command, but he's not completely devoid of fastball command. So if he tightens that up a little bit, and keeps those home runs down, I think we're going to see a strong season for him. Plus, I love a guy in Oakland who has the talent, because that ballpark certainly still helps. It's still one of the few ballparks that still gives you a really decided advantage for pitchers, because even San Diego's kind of neutralized with that scoreboard cutting some of the marine layer effect. Seattle moved their fences in. So, you know, I think that Oakland's still that one place where you really get an advantage. The 198 BABIP, of course, that's going to regress. I'm not talking about the 215 ERA, 0.82 whip as something you should expect from Cotton. But I do think of a relatively full season, say an ERA qualified, which means at least 162 innings of like a, you know, 340 ERA and a strong whip, because he doesn't really walk guys with a good strikeout rate, because this is another guy, 21% last year. I think that's going up with the swing and miss he's able to generate. I think we're going to see a nice season on Jarrell Cotton. I like a lot of the Oakland staff. Sean Manaea, I know, is getting a lot of hype. Sonny Gray, if he's healthy, you know, he got tanked yesterday. We're recording this on Wednesday the 8th. The 7th, he absolutely got obliterated in the game. It is spring training, and you got a balance between it. Spring training doesn't matter, and spring training does matter for guys who are injured. I'll give him a little bit of a hit on that, but I'm still keeping an eye on Gray. I like a lot of the guys in Oakland, but Cotton's probably my favorite because he's so cheap.
I think Cotton's my favorite as well. I talked about Manaea and having a few concerns on the Monday show, and I have been a huge detractor of Sonny Gray since he burnt me last year. but Cotton is a guy especially with the price, even with the price going up a little bit as we get kind of closer and closer to the end of draft season, he's still the 70th starting pitcher off the board. I mean, there's nothing but profit to be made there. If you don't hit on your, you know, fifth or sixth starting pitcher, it's not going to murder you at all. And I do see the upside that you do. That changeup is ridiculous. It is absolutely dirty. I do love the park. And I think, you know, especially like in wins leagues, I think people tend to downgrade the A's. I think the A's are a little bit better than last year, at least in terms of their lineup. So I think they're a team that may actually not be as big of a negative as people think. And I think that's one of the reasons that holds down his value in NFBC, which is a wins league. So I kind of like Cotton this year. Chuck, you always hate anything Oakland A's. What are your thoughts?
actually, my thoughts on this are I love Jarrell Cotton because of how low you can get him in certain drafts. And I owned Sean Manaea last year, and Manaea is the one that in my head I can't grasp having as much helium when it comes to the Oakland A's pitchers. And again, you do get this, the the perceived weakness that there is for Cotton is that he's going to have a hard time keeping the ball in the yard. And you play in a cavernous park that certainly limits that part of the regression. And so to me, he's somebody that I definitely want a piece of. And as much as I've hated on Billy Beane, you know, getting Manaea back and people liking him and getting Cotton back in recent trades, at least they got something out of completely taking their franchise out of contention. So,
Darius, what are your thoughts on Cotton?
Yeah, I'm quite excited too. The changeup, as everybody's mentioned, is obviously a great pitch. I think I've seen so many different opinions on this guy, you know, from people saying they still think he's a reliever to people saying they think he can have number two upside if the other pitches come together. So I think there's a lot that could go on, and we obviously haven't seen a big enough major league sample to know how it's all going to play out yet. But I think for somebody that you can take hopefully fairly late in the draft, there's a lot of upside here, and the changeup is a good enough pitch to carry an arsenal if you can just get those other pitches up to sort of average. So, yeah, I'm quite excited. And at the moment, he still seems like he's a decent value, but it does feel like he's the kind of guy who's creeping up the boards at the moment.
Yeah, just be warned. If people in your league listen to Paul and Eno and the Sleeper in the Bus podcast, he will go probably at least 30 to 40 picks higher than his ADP. True. So just be wary of that. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Paul, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, guys. I really appreciate it.
Definitely have you on again in season, hopefully. Paul, why don't you give yourself some plugs again and tell people where you can be reached on social media.
On Twitter at Spore, on Snapchat at PSpore, Twitch, PSpore24. Hit me up, Fangraphs. I do my chat every Friday. I write 3 to 4 times a week, podcast 3 to 4 times a week. That's really it right now. ESPN Daily Notes on Tuesdays. We'll start back up once the season gets going. And yeah, that's how you can reach me. I'm always open for questions and stuff like that on Twitter. So if you got a baseball, even if it's not baseball related and you want to just chat, hit me up.
Yeah, and I'm saying you and Jason got to bring back the kind of the pop culture, what's going on in your world this week, because I missed that from the Towers of Power. You know, it's how I learned about House of Cards.
Duly noted. Duly noted.
All right. Good. I'm going to keep reminding you. Chuck, okay. What are you working on, and where can people reach you at?
I can be reached at just Chucking It on Twitter, and I'm doing kind of a full draft strategy and in-season move strategy piece that should be ready for the site by the end of the week.
Nice. Darius, where can people reach you at? What are you working on?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. A couple of new pieces up at BP Rigiville this week, including one today about recent World Series champions. Obviously, with the Cubs going into this season as the defending champs, I thought I'd see how the other defending champs have gotten over the last 20 years or so. Also, if you really enjoy listening to British guys talk about baseball, I probably shouldn't say this because I'll lose my novelty, but the guys at Batflips and Nerds that I work with, they've been doing a lot of great stuff with preview podcasts, basically getting a different fan for every team to come on from the UK and explain how they got into the game and how they watch it over here, that kind of thing. So if you're interested in how the Brits consume Major League Baseball, then that's a really good one to look out for as well.
Definitely. I got to check that out. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a rate and review if it's of the 5-star variety, and you send me a screenshot of it either via Twitter or email. I'll make sure you are entered in to win some free Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear. And if we get enough by Friday, I will start a second listener league. The first one just finished drafting. But I'm heading out on vacation next week, so won't be around. Read all my stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com or on Fangraphs, even though I didn't do an article today, which is probably something I should have thought about when having my boss on. And then if you're into something other than, you know, fantasy sports, Eli Rosenzweig and I have started the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Survivor podcast, and I'm going to be on the Pop Goes Your World podcast on Friday, talking about reality shows because I like garbage TV with Yancey Eaton and Chris McBrien. So definitely check out all of those things. That is going to finish us out for this episode. For Paul, Darius, Chuck, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season. Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on
Yes.
Hit mute real quick.
Now leave it on mute. No, I'm just kidding.
All right, now unmute it.
Okay.
Okay, I was just getting some feedback or something right there where you're talking, so.
Well, I don't, my Fangraphs, my computer, like, froze up on me, which has never happened before, so I hope that's not why you're getting the feedback. But, like, it's I'm going to blame Fangraphs and the people that write
freaking
the Fangraphs.
Fangraphs. Oh, my God, man.
Well, see, if you were a premium member, you would get it ad-free, which makes it so much better.
It's true.
I'm going to put this all at the back end of the episode.
I'm sure
it's
you
a good
are.
Thing we don't have any Fangraphs writers here to hear Chuck complaining.
Those guys are the clowns.
They're the worst.
You don't want to mess with those guys, dude.
Back to baseball reference I go. Just kidding.
How dare you? How dare you mention that in front of me?
Yeah, but I didn't want to. You know, I didn't want to turn off my computer and turn it back on. So
okay,
that wouldn't have been good.
No.
So I was kind of caught in no man's land.
All right. Well, it's everything seems better now.
Okay. Perfect. Sorry about that.
No worries. All right. We
just got done with Verlander.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just, like I said, I'm still waking up.
That whatever that sound was should be part of the intro for sure.
Definitely.